Well, before the end of the programme, we'll have tomorrow morning's front pages. But first, there are few people who can claim their books are bestsellers before they're printed. But the use of strange ciphers, codes, religious iconography, salices and secret sects has ensured that Dan Brown is on that shortlist. His new book, Inferno, a very particular rendition of Dante's Divine Comedy, is already a bestseller and has his Harvard hero Robert Langdon desperately tracking a deadly virus before it sends forth a plague on the overpopulated world. Dan Brown has been to hell and back to write Inferno, hiding from his legions of fans as he sweeps through Florence and Venice on his long research trips, pushing on secret doors and slipping along hidden passages. Whereas in the Da Vinci Code, the author had the symbolist Langdon chasing down secret elites in the Catholic Church, thereby upsetting the Vatican, in Inferno, Langdon's on the tail of a brilliant transhuman, a genetically upscaled scientist, hell-bent on wiping out half the world's population with his invention of germline manipulation. And Brown is once again upsetting the Vatican with a swipe at its position on birth control. Inferno allows Dan Brown to exercise his own preoccupation with overpopulation. In the words of the novel, by any biological gauge, our species has exceeded our sustainable numbers. And he has a warning from Dante himself about those who ignore the pressing problems of the world. The darkest places in hell are reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in times of moral crisis. Dan Brown, in all your books, and indeed particularly in Inferno, your love of history is very, very clear, but you use history to make a very strong moral point.
That is true. I like to write about big topics. I do write fiction, but I feel that some of these big ethical issues that are modern make the fiction and the history much more relevant to modern times.
And of course, this refers back to the plague, where so much of the population was wiped out, and now the world is about to be hit by a virus by somebody who is worried about overpopulation. You are worried about overpopulation, aren't you?
I think all of us should be. You know, in the last 85 years, the world population has tripled. And we add 200,000 new people every day. This is something that that futurists are very concerned about.
You certainly came into, shall we say, disrepute with the Roman Catholic Church after the Da Vinci Code. And this time round, you also are very concerned about birth control and the Church's stand on birth control.
Well, it's funny. The Vatican, I think, is only mentioned once in this novel and in passing. But certainly the Catholic Church is very influential. And their position on birth control, you know, could be seen as a dangerous one in a world that is whose population is growing so rapidly.
And is this, in a sense, through fiction, your way of giving them a warning about it?
I don't know who I would be to warn the Catholic Church of anything, but certainly it's I use fiction to raise awareness of things that are important to me.
One of the other things that crops up in Inferno, and something that you're very interested in, is this whole idea of transhumanism, the idea that you can genetically, as it were, upgrade yourself by way of surgery, a better eyesight, better hearing, and so forth. A genuine proposition, do you think?
Well, certainly, we now have the genetic technology to do all kinds of things that that are quite fascinating, have enormous promise, but also are very, very dangerous. The human genome is a house of cards, and if we start altering little bits of our physiology, other things may shift dramatically without our anticipation of that happening.
So without the idea of unintended consequences, would you consider it yourself?
It's funny, we've been doing similar things for years with vaccines and in vitro fertilization. The ethical question of whether one should do it to oneself is really at the core of this novel, and it's a tough debate. I'm not sure of the answer, actually, to be honest with you.
So, in fact, if the circumstances were right and if the ethical questions were answered, you wouldn't be against perhaps tweaking your eyesight, tweaking your hearing?
I don't think I'd be. I'd love to be able to see a little bit better.
One of the other things that you have got a predilection for in your novels is torture. Now, at some point in Inferno, and I'm not sure at what stage you were at, you suffered writer's block. And in a sense, it seemed that what you put yourself through was a form of torture. This idea that you hang upside down in order to get inspiration back, have you always done that?
I realize it makes me sound very strange.
But marginally.
I have just... marginally. I have always found that hanging upside down is a great way to oxygenate your brain and also to see the world in a new way. It works for me, strange or not.
Anything else you do to get the creative juices flowing that perhaps people would think was slightly odd?
While we're making me out to be odd, I'll share that with you. I have an hourglass on my desk, which every hour I flip it over and I stop and do some push-ups and sit-ups just to keep the blood moving. I find that it's very hard to write fast-paced plots if your blood pressure has dropped too far, and I like to keep the pulse moving.
That doesn't seem too odd, actually. What about the gravity? What about the gravity boots?
Yes, I do use those every day.
But they haven't appeared in a plot yet.
No, they I guess they were going to be secret, but they at some point got out into the press, and people find them fascinating for some reason.
Now, you have sold, I mean, you're at the top of the bestseller list before you've actually even sold a novel because of the pre-sales, and you have these legions of fans, but you don't have legions of fans among the critics. Does that bother you?
You know what? I wish everybody loved what I do. That's not the way it goes. But if I had to choose between pleasing my fans and pleasing my critics, I think I've chosen properly.
But you are a professor of creative writing, so you must care very deeply about, as it were, the criticism, the broader criticism of literature.
You know, when you're a novelist or a painter or a musician, all you have to go by is your own taste. You create the work of art that suits your taste, and then you just hope people share your taste. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
So you're not worried about the Ninth Circle, Dante's Ninth Circle of pride? You're not worried that your pride is pricked because, by and large, already the critics have been lukewarm?
Well, again, it's almost become sport, and no, my pride is fine. I'll be fine.
Thank you very much, Dan Brown. We'll let you go back to hanging upside down.
Okay, thank you.